Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 34 for February 11th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and we are coming to you live and on location. Out of a location, I guess you could say, because we are not currently in the studio. As you may be able to tell from the audio, I'm trying to broadcast this live over Spreaker. So if you're out there listening, by all means, let me hear from you there, and I'd love to hear from you in the chat room. Please check out our website if you get a chance at tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows. You can leave me a voice message at 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, you can email those to me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Also, follow me on Twitter, and that is @technoman. So if you are wondering where we're at, we are coming to you live and in living color from Hershey, Pennsylvania, the home of the Hershey bar, the Hershey chocolate. We are out on location right now. We are here for a conference. And I wanted to get this show out to you, so I thought, well, I'm going to sit down here and actually broadcast it out. The show is coming to you, believe it or not, I'm tethered into my smartphone. If you've never tried that before, the iPhone, the new iPhones with the new iOS app has a built-in hotspot. You turn it on, and you can very simply tether your laptop or your iPad or whatever you may have right into your hotspot. So it's pretty handy to have. And hopefully the broadcaster is going to come out okay to you there tonight. And the audio is going to work. So we're going to go for it here. I don't really like how the signal strength meter is going out there, but we'll see what happens and we'll try to deal with it there. So as being here, there's many, many vendors, as there is in anything you do anymore. There's always vendors out there. And the vendors I found here tonight, we're not going to really talk about who they are as much as what they were selling. So I talked to a group of guys here, and they're very knowledgeable in the server market. And they do deal with Dell servers. Now, I'm not one of those guys that's going to push any type of server onto you there, either Dell or HP. We have some Sun servers in our racks, and Oracle recently bought those guys out. So that's currently what we're running right now with a Sun SAN, or a network attached storage device, a NAS, whichever way you want to call it. There's so many different names for those nowadays. But if you get a chance, check out Dell's website and look at the new PowerEdge VRTX, the VRTX. It's pretty crazy looking, actually. It's in a 5U rack case. Now think about that, 5U. Most servers in our racks are 1U. And what that means is that's the space that it takes up in the rack, just a different size. So a 5U would be 5 1Us, right, all stacked up together. Kind of makes sense. There is 4 blades that you can put in there, blade servers. And each blade has dual processors on it, so dual, quad-core processors on it. And each blade will take up to 32 gigabytes. Yep, that's right, 32 gigabytes of RAM. That's amazing. That's some amazing power. And then in this same box, in this same 5U box, they're putting up to 25 SAS SSD drives. So again, that's pretty incredible. I think the speed out of this thing is going to be pretty amazing. There's a 1 gigabyte Ethernet backbone in this thing. So what they're saying is, with this actual box, what you're starting to see is your whole server rack is getting put into one 5U box. Because if you think about it, you have attached network storage devices, and those attached network storage devices are in there, and the blades are in there, so everything's in that one box, and everything's hooked to a fiberglass backplane. So you just slide the stuff in, and it becomes its own servers at that point. So as I said, you can have four servers in this one box, and they're blades, so they're pretty neat. That could be good or bad, I mean, depending on what you want to look at it. But they do also have two internal flash drive storages, and the gentleman showed it to me there in the booth, and these things are SSD, or SD, I should say, just like the camera cards you would put in the camera, the SD camera cards. So if you look at those, how small those are, and this thing has two of them in, apparently what you do is you can load your operating system on top of those, and I mean, it's extremely fast boot up, and it's just extremely out of this world operations. There's also a back expansion slot for 8 PCI Express cards, so you can add PCI Express cards into this box. It's just a pretty amazing box. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put a link in the show notes for you so you'll have it there and you'll be able to see that. And so if you go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com, look for episode number 34, and then there'll be a link there, and you can just click on that and go take a look at this thing. It does have redundant power supplies, which I said, you know, I'm sure you would talk and you'd want redundant power supplies anyway. So it does have the redundant power supplies in it. But again, I was just looking at a brochure here, trying to see if I see anything else there that may help you out a little bit more to kind of visualize this thing. The total capacity on these SAS drives is 48 terabytes of storage. 48 terabytes. It would be hard for most people to grow out of this thing. We're looking at them now. I'm thinking, well, we're going to check some pricing anyway to see what they're going to cost. But this could be a guaranteed possibility for a school. I mean, I think it would work really well. And any kind of office you may have up there, I mean, up to, I don't know how many workers, but I'm also going to look into these for pricing for my clients, for my consulting clients, because I think this could fit into their operations because, again, everything is in the same box. I mean, you really can't beat that. Everything's in one box. And it's supposed to be extremely cool, extremely very quiet. They said you can put this thing anywhere and you're just not going to hear it running. So, again, it's something to look at. And, again, it's the PowerEdge VR TX is the model number. It says server node of operations, if you're familiar with this. Dell PowerEdge M620 and the M520 servers. So if you're familiar with that, I don't know. You can also, I have in my notes here too, you can also put this thing, it comes with a wheel, or they sell with an optional wheel kit. So you can put these four casters on it, and it has a really, really nice front plate. And it will stand just like a vertical server. So if you don't have a rack, you can buy this thing and just put it, you know, on a stand somewhere or pull on the floor if you need to do that. And it's going to be fine for you. It's going to run great. So I had a great conversation today. I'm actually going to look for the name here as I'm talking and try to dig this up real quick. I think I can find it pretty quick here. From Jay. So I had a great conversation with Jay today. And Jay, I want to thank you again for calling me up there. Jay was kind of asking more information about my online courses. And Jay has his own business that he runs. And I didn't really get into where he resides at or anything. But if you want to check out Jay's business at any time, I don't think he would mind. But I'm going to put it out there. It's called aboxtech.com. It's aboxtech.com, and check that out. I really didn't check that out yet either, but check out his website, A Box. I'm going to look it up when we're talking. aboxtech.com. Pretty catchy name, and apparently it's a service consulting group that he runs. He says he runs the latest hardware with no capital expenditure. He also looks like he does phone systems. So I'm trying to see what area he may be in. I know the area code's 302. Okay, there it is. It's a Delaware-based company. So if you're in Delaware and you're looking for some IT solutions, somebody to maybe help you out there, get in contact with me here at the show, and we will make sure we connect you up here with Jay. But anyway, Jay had a great conversation with me today. He wanted me to call him up. So I called him, and we talked about my online classes. And he wanted to know exactly what was on his online classes. But the conversation we got into was more that I wanted to discuss tonight was talking about, he called it splitting DNS. Now, if you've never done that, I call it intra and outra DNS is kind of where I refer to it as, but I guess it has many names. But what we're talking about here is, let's say you have a server-based application or a web-based application in your intranet. A lot of us do this. I know we have at least four different server-based or intranet-based applications that we deal with. And we have to serve up an internal IP address, and then you have to serve up an external IP address because people need to be able to get to that application when they're on the road. In our instance with working at a school, we have parents that have to get onto our grade books and whatever happens there. But the teachers in our organization also have to get on that grade book. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to set up a domain name structure. And what I did was I actually made a subdomain name. So let's just take a for instance here. We're going to try to map this out for you so you can try to put it in your head. Because a lot of times when I'm working with a podcast, and when we're working with radio, anytime like this, we have to kind of describe things and talk about it. But what tends to happen is, and I see a lot of companies doing this, on the internal side of things, you would do something like, okay, when you're in the building, if you're in the building and you want to get to this online finance application, let's say you're with a finance department, you'd have to go to 10.16.1.95, and that would be http://, and you would give them the IP address. Okay, that's fine. But what happens is, and this happened to us a long time ago with our Exchange server, when they go home, what do? They try to type in http://10.16.1.92, and what happens? You're right. Web page unfound. It's not going to find that by any means. That's definitely not going to happen. So what you need to do is we need to have a routable address for the outside. So then you're going to tell them, you're going to say, look, now this is what's going to happen. And you tell them, this is what's going to happen. You are going to, at home, I'm just bringing up my chat window in case anyone wants to chat here. When you're at home, you would simply log in, and you're going to go to, they'll tell them http://72.151.90.85 because that's your outside routable address. And you're like, well, okay. So now they have to remember two different addresses in your head. Think of the last time you had to remember two different phone numbers. Can you remember them today? Probably not. So what we want to do is we want to set this thing up so the intranet domain name or the subdomain name would work inside your office and outside your office. And folks, this is so easy. It's almost like it's once you get used to DNS and you understand how DNS routes everything, and when you also understand your internal DNS and having an external DNS. A lot of people out there, and I don't recommend this, I don't recommend you set up a DNS server in your business that is a routable DNS. Don't give your DNS server an outside address is what I'm saying. Keep it solely as an inside address. There's enough places on the internet supplying DNS services for you that you don't need to buy anything inside. You just don't need, or you don't need to let people come in. Because what you start doing is you'll start getting a lot of work off of that server, because as DNS servers get put out there in the world, you know you can get bounced around to many, many, many of them looking for your information. So I'd recommend you put your information on somebody else's DNS server out there. And it works very well. And I'm going to give you the one that we use here in just a minute, and you can decide if you want to do that. So this is the way it's going to work. You're going to take your DNS server in your server rack, and you're going to take that address, 10.16.1.92, and you're going to map it as an A record. And on that A record, you already have your domain name in there. So let's say it's billybob.net for your network, billybob.net. So that is your internal. Okay, so we're gonna call this this application finance.billybob.net. So, and it's going to be mapped internal. So when you type that address in the web browser internally, that the whole address, not the number, it's going to hit the DNS server, and the DNS server is going to say, oh, wait, here's that server right here. It's inside our building, 10.16.1.92. Cool, works great. Then you go to your firewall, okay? And once you're in your firewall, you're going to make a static route to the outside address. So you have 72.65.whatever, and you probably have this set up anyway if they're already coming through. But let's say you didn't think of this yet. And you're going to do a static route. And with that static route, what you're going to end up doing then is you are going to very simply put the outside address and do an inside-outside, and you're going to put the internal address. So when anybody comes through that address, they're going to come right through, and they're going to hit that DNS server, and they're going to go straight through. It's a straight tunnel right to that particular web application. But now, wait a minute. I said earlier, we don't want to give them the outside IP address. Again, that could be actually a security flaw, too. I'd rather somebody worry about the name, and then when they're coming through, I can take that A record, and I can just map it to port 80, so I know that's the only place they're coming into that rack, into port 80. They're not coming in that server to FTP or to Telnet or do any other that crazy stuff, right? So now we can go online and find, and there's a lot of services out there. The one I use is called zoneedit.com. Zoneedit.com. They allow you to have three zones. So basically, we're talking about three different domains, full domains for free. And if you want any of their other stuff, and I suggest dig into it, because if you have your own mail server, they should do a mail backup, and it's really, really nice. What happens with that is when people come through to find your mail server, if it's not available, they hold your mail right there. And then when your mail server becomes available, it will dump it into your mail. If you don't have a backup for your mail system right now, ZoneEdit is 100% per. I used it for years before we went to Google Apps. And it is there, and it works really well. And you have to pay for that service, but it's very inexpensive. And I would recommend you do that if you have a mail server. But let's say you're just going to use it simply for DNS. So now what's going to happen there is the DNS server, that's your outside DNS, you'd put an A record in there, and you're going to do the same thing, finance.billybob.net. And this time you're going to do an A record to 72.162. whatever that outside address is that you have. And then you're going to save that. And be careful when you're using ZoneEdit, because there's something that I missed when they update their systems. You now have to publish. So you'll publish that new record, and what that does, it pushes it out to the internet. So all those great DNS hosting services out there, they all pick it up. All the root servers pick it up, and now they know what your address is. So now when somebody's at home, guess what? They type in finance.billybob.net. Boom. Goes right into your server because it knows its route from the outside. And when you're inside, it knows its route from the inside. And you have a beautiful, beautiful user experience. It's real easy. Folks, people's minds, and it was funny, the other day I was talking to my wife and we were kicking ideas back and forth. And we were talking about all the phone numbers we used to remember that we don't know anymore. It's sad. I know hers and she knows mine. But we don't know our own kids' phone numbers now. And I'm not getting that old, folks. Believe me, most of you out there know me. And you've seen me around and you've seen my picture or whatever. And I'm not getting that old. I'm not like 80 years old and I'm forgetting things, that's for sure. But anyway, we just don't do it. So for us as network server engineers or network technology directors or coordinators out there, or even that guy and the girl is trying to handle this all and trying to make sense of it, we can't give our people more numbers and say, look, here's more numbers to worry about. Take care and keep these up. And we just can't do that, folks. It's just not right to do that. So we need to make things easier, and that's one way to do it. And if you want to call, and like I said, we were calling it today splitting DNS or I call it internal external DNS, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't really matter. But that is the way you do it, is to set those two different IP addresses up pointing to the exact same subdomain, and you will get everybody where they need to be. It works extremely well, and it's a positive thing. We have right now, I can think off my top of my head, I think we have three that I worry about for the outside users and also our inside users. So three different ones there that we worry about, and they all work all the time. Unless the power goes out nationally and you lose your internet connection to your building, then, well, that's just not going to work out for you. So, and then we can get a whole nother discussion about mirroring sites out there, and you could put your site somewhere else. Not really the applications, because you got to think of it this way, folks. If you have a PHP application or a web-based application, and let's say you mirrored the site, which is fine. You can mirror static web pages. That's pretty easy stuff to do to another location. But what's going to happen is if those sites that you're mirroring can't get back to the database because the internet connection is down at the main place anyway, because it's really, you can sync your data, but you're getting into a ton of work. So if it can't get back to that database, then that application is not going to work anyway. So don't really get too involved with that. A lot of people and a lot of my clients will call me up and say, Jack, look, I want to make sure that my web page, if my power's out and nobody can get to my web server, I want to make sure they can read my web page. And I'm thinking, if your power's out these days with the phone systems we have, these high class IP phone systems and all this, if your power's out and they can see your web page, chances are they're not going to be able to call you anyway, because your web page is going to be out and your phones are going to be dead. So they're not going to call you anyway. So that's just some thoughts I had running through my head there with that. So I don't think it's worth doing that. But we can make another discussion one night about that when I do a show. Again, I'm sorry that this show is coming to you a little bit later today on a Tuesday. But I do produce them on a Tuesday. I've been doing this a long time now. But normally the show does come out to you at 8 o'clock. So if you're thinking about, hey, I was going to watch the live or listen to the live show tonight of Tips from the Server Room, and then all of a sudden it wasn't there, I'm sorry about that. Like I said, being out of location, there's a lot of stuff I had to worry about. I'm used to being in a studio with, you know, two or three monitors, an iPad, a laptop, and I could put this thing together. You got the mics. I know what software I'm running. But being out here with no mixer, that was a problem tonight, because I had to do the intro and the outro music for the show. So I have no mixers. I'm using everything through the Spreaker app. And thank goodness for it, because it does help a lot when you're on the road. I really like it, and it works really, really well. So anyway, other than that, I'm thinking what else I might be able to tell you that I did see here at the show. I did tell my wife tonight at dinner, we were talking, and I said, you know, it's kind of funny because everybody in education, and I don't know if you folks are in education or not, but everybody I see is trying to put a solution out there to a problem that we don't even know it exists. And everybody has an idea of how technology can be incorporated in education, and everybody builds something to help you educate children with technology. But, you know, the truth be told, and believe me, I love education. I love technology. I've been doing this for a long, long time. The truth is, teachers have been educating children for years with no technology. So I don't think we're trying to I don't know what the problem is that we're trying to fix. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't exactly know what we're trying to fix. And I've been trying to wrap my head around this for 2 or 3 years. 2 years ago, I got to the point where I was going to get out of education because I didn't feel that me as a technologist was making a difference in the schools. I felt, and if you're not going to make a difference, then it's probably time to step down, because I'm not one of those guys that like to have a job just to make money. I mean, making money is fine, don't get me wrong, but a consulting business where I go out and I work with a lot of different medical offices, I know how to make money with them, with those folks, and I know that I'm making a difference with them, because everything's medical records, everything's electronic medical records now. They need us in those areas, and I know I can make a difference. But, you know, after talking to some of the student body, they said, well, they think that we are making a difference as technologists, that the schools do need us there. And don't get me wrong, we have a lot of technology that we must have. With the state reporting now, we have stuff in the school districts with the student information systems that we have to keep secure. We have to know everything that we need to know as technologists. We have to know that. They have to have somebody there to do that. Not just so much fixing a computer, like, hey, the computer's broken. Will the kids still learn that day? Yeah, they will. They will. All the iPads, all the glass shattered on all the iPads. Will the kids still learn that day? Yeah, they will. They're still going to learn just fine that day. Does the technology – see, what I'm waiting for, I think, for my field – and I'm sorry I'm getting off on these rants, and I don't know if you enjoy something like this or not, but I'm just kind of talking here out loud, kind of thinking. The thing that I look at, I want to see test scores from 20 years ago and be able to see those same test scores today with the technology – and see, is there any difference? Are the kids learning at a different pace? Are they picking up things in new ways? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, and we like to tell people, yes, they are. We have to buy more and buy more technology and keep buying more technology. But I don't know. If the kids are allowed to use the technology, investigate the technology, and do more with it, then is it really making a difference? Maybe. I don't know. I did read an interesting article that I'll share with you since we have a few more minutes here. And that article was about one school out there that took all their old laptops, and their tech director put Ubuntu 13, whatever the newest one, 13.10 or whatever, on all of these laptops and hand them out to the kids and said, look, hey, load applications on it. Do whatever you want to with it. Kick it around. Learn how to program PHP, learn how to program some JavaScripting around it to kind of learn more about it. They want the kids to actually learn the technology and learn that everything in the world is not Microsoft Windows. I know we talk a lot about Microsoft Server here, and I don't mean to bust your bubble, but everything is not Windows, and you guys know that. If you're a technologist out there, you're like, well, you know, there's Macs in the world. And we could talk about that one night. If you want a real interesting experience, try to run a Mac server. And you better have a lot of coffee on hand, because you're going to have a long night there to kind of beat yourself up. Because if you're not like a real Mac kind of guy, you may not get it. It might take you quite a while to understand it. But anyway, there is a lot of other stuff out there. I'm glad these schools are letting kids see it. I talked to you folks maybe, or might have talked on one of my other shows a few weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. We put that Windows 8 machine out in the school, in the library, just to see what the kids would do with it. And we're getting more and more kids wanting to sit there and use it. And we put this in a high school, so more and more kids are trying it out, and they're starting to like it and getting the hang of it. So that's a good thing, you know. I think it's our job, too, is to put the technology, even if you're in business, don't be afraid of new technology, guys. I mean, if you have a question out there, by all means, email me, because in schools, we see it all. We get to touch everything. That's what I do love about my job. We're trying to find ways, you know, we find ways to get iPads to print in the network to any printer out there. I mean, that is a big, huge thing. We start getting Chromebooks in. We know how to take those Chromebooks now and let them print to any printer in our business or in the school, in the company, wherever you're at. So there's a lot of things that we can probably share together with you and talk about later on down the road. So that's what I say. Keep an open mind in your business. If your CEO walks in one day and hands you an iPad and say, here, I want to see all my files on the server, it can be done. What do they always say? There's an app for that. So something to think about. Anyway. All right, folks, so let's wrap this up for tonight and get it finished up here. Folks, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi Server from A to Z, from installing to administrating, please don't hesitate. Sign up for one of my online courses, and you can sign up at tipsfromtheserverroom.com, or you can go to jackstechcorner.com. You can sign up there. Just look for the online class link at the top of the page. Click on that. These courses are very much self-paced. All you do is watch a video, and then you take a quiz. Now, folks, I had somebody tell me just a couple weeks ago, Jack, why would I bother? Because I've seen your videos on YouTube. They're really good, and I appreciate people saying that. And you can find any video you want on YouTube. You can. But what makes these courses nice, folks, it's A to Z. So we go from installing, and it you know, each step of the way I teach you to build this server, to set up your Active Directory, but everything's in an organized fashion. Yeah, you can get on YouTube. I guarantee you're going to find these topics, but you're going to have one guy telling you to do one thing, another guy telling you to do another way, and not that, you know, not that they're not wrong, but what I'm trying to say is it's nice just to have everything organized, right? Think when you went to college. If you go to college and you went to your school, wherever you went to, say you went to Ohio State, and you were learning there, so you took your history class at Ohio State, and they said, oh, wait, math? You have to go down the road to Kent State, or you have to go up the road to Penn State, or wherever, Florida State. There's no consistency. At least with these online classes, there is consistency. If you have a question, you know you can just simply drop me a message, and I'm going to say, hey, we'll take a look at that, and we'll figure it out for you. So once again, when you're finished out with that course, you do receive a certificate in the mail. And you can sign up again at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. So check it out. They're very inexpensive. Most companies have been paying for them for people to take them. So it's not going to be really a big cost to you. So folks, thank you so much for joining me here at Tips from the Server Room. I do enjoy you being here. If you can be here live, that would make it even better. And normally it's 8 o'clock every Tuesday. And that's 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Where we're on Spreaker. You'll catch us on Spreaker there. And if you go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com and click on the little radio show at the top, that is how you can find us live. And then there's a chat window where you can actually live chat. So if you ever want to do that, I'll be more than happy to check it out there and listen and to what you have to say and maybe answer some questions along the way. So have a great work week, if that is all possible. And we'll see you back here next Tuesday night on Tips from the Server Room. Thanks so much. See you then. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.